I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, streaming live on YouTube, on Twitch, on Periscope as well. Talking all things Nashville Predators right now. Preds assistant coach Dan Hynote will join us at 7:30. We'll look ahead to the matchup tonight for the Predators against the Dallas Stars. Nicole Auerbach at 8 o'clock from The Athletic. And then at 9:30, Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, will join us. So still a lot to come here today on the show. And Joe, this is a massive game tonight for the Predators from this standpoint. You've won six in a row. You're going for seven in a row tonight. And obviously you're still in a race with Chicago and Columbus kind of nipping on your heels, chasing after that fourth spot in the Central Division. But also, like, if you can get this one done against Dallas in regulation and you win this game, you'll move to 9 points ahead of the Stars. And while they'll still have four games in hand on the Predators after that, you move 9 points ahead. That would require Dallas to win all four of those games in hand just to be 1 point behind you at that point. And if you've seen Dallas as of late, I think asking them to win four games in a row of any kind is very difficult at this point. So the Predators could go a long way tonight in creating some pretty significant separation between themselves and the Dallas Stars and one of those teams chasing them in the playoff race here. So this is a big game for the Nashville Predators tonight at home. Now, they came out the other night and Dallas played really well in the first couple of periods. I think by far was the better team. And Saros played well. They kicked it into high gear in the third period and won the game. But if you can win this one in regulation, that would be a pretty huge blow to the Stars at this point.
And do we know the last time they won seven in a row?
I am guessing it was in the President's Trophy year at some time, but I don't even know that. I'd have to go back and look. That's my guess.
Yeah, it's probably a good guess.
Yeah.
It's just possible since then.
Possible. But I'd have to go back and look.
That's quite a streak. It's again, when we talk about this stuff, it's kind of like, wow, really? They're in that position,
yeah.
But they are. They are in Dallas, I still think, is like in the first two periods the other night, I'm like, okay, see, don't count Dallas out yet. Because, see, that team, very physical, very hard to score on. They've had all kinds of bad luck and injuries, but like, they're coming into this game like they know they've got to flip the switch here, turn it on. Again, why that game was so impressive that the Preds end up winning the thing, because it took a lot. I think it took a lot of resolve to come back in that, the way that they were being outplayed in that game. So this has got to be absolute desperation time to the point you made there on Dallas's situation for the Stars.
And it's interesting, too, because we've been wondering how close the Predators could be to getting some bodies back in their lineup. And Luke Cunningham has come back in. He's played really well. But we talked to Matt Duchene yesterday here on the show and, you know, basically made it sound like, you know, he's been skating, but just some things have not gone quite according to plan in terms of his recovery. And then yesterday afternoon, the Predators come out and announce Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, Brad Richardson, Ryan Ellis, Mark Borowiecki, and Lucas Pisa, who has been hurt for a while now. All of those players considered week to week with their current respective injuries. So not good news on that front, particularly when it pertains to Philip Forsberg. You're wondering maybe if he was close to getting back in, saying week to week with Philip Forsberg at this point. Now, What does week to week mean? Does that mean next week he's available? We'll find out. But week to week is never something you want to hear.
Yeah, that's not a good term. There was a week to week this year that was
then very short.
Who was that?
I want to say that was Saros. I think Saros was week to week, and then he was back.
Yeah, it was before him, though.
Wasn't Yossi, was it? His wasn't considered week to
week. They've had so many injuries, I'm trying to keep up. I think so. Somebody put this out on Twitter yesterday. I think it was Corey Massasak, who used to work for NHL.com, and he says now covers the Devils. Two players for the Predators have played every game this year. Two of them. Colton Sissons, Victor Arvidsson. The only two players that have played in every game for the Preds this year.
It's actually kind of amazing on the Arvidsson front, too.
It is.
He would not be one of the guys you would pick. Yeah, the Forsberg thing, that's tough. For him to go to week to week. I mean, they're 3-0 without him here, but it might be tough to sustain.
Yeah. That's been your best player all year long, yeah.
When did Yarncroke miss a game? I don't remember that.
I think he did miss maybe one or two. Yeah.
I bet you they lost.
They probably did. Probably did. He's been MVP this year, for goodness sake. 11 goals for Cali Yarncroke. We'll see what happens in Preds Pick to Click with that coming up a little bit later. Maybe you take him. Maybe I take him. We'll see.
I took him and it worked out for me all right the other
day. That's right.
Are you going to try to take him away from me? You get one win and you're going to get all cocky, huh?
Yeah.
What's the order today?
I believe you are first.
Today. I haven't even – oh, okay. Well, then I guess you might be SOL.
Yes, it takes really off the board.
I think I'm last today.
Ooh.
Yeah. So even more challenging to continue this streak.
Were you first the other day?
I was.
Okay. Huh. You never know.
We'll see what happens there. But, yeah, not good news on the injury front yesterday for the Nashville Predators. We'll see how quickly they can bounce back from that. But, like I said, I mean, a big game for the Preds tonight, and they found a way to play. And I know we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but hearing Duchesne kind of describe what the forecheck has been like from his vantage point and how the Predators have gone about executing that more efficiently and being more confident with the way they're playing on the forecheck. Like I think it's been something that even if you're not a hockey nerd like I am and you're just a casual hockey fan, I think you can notice when you watch them play how different they look, how aggressive they've been in forcing turnovers and kind of going the other way and getting the puck back, playing more often with the puck in this stretch recently. I think that's been pretty noticeable in their game. So I know Duchesne kind of got deep in the weeds yesterday with the F3s and the F2s and the forward, you know, responsibilities on plays like that, that sometimes people can be like, what's he talking about? But I think it's been a pretty glaring difference in this team, how good they've been on the forecheck and how relentless they've been and what a difference that's made in the bottom line of their results.
Well, I mean, we talked early this season about they never sustain anything, and they, you know, opponents are just cycling on them, and they're not able to, you know, to have any kind of forecheck, and that was one of the laundry list of things that weren't going well. So it's the obviously the way this team's constructed, I mean, you have to be able to do that. They are not going up and down the ice and you know, scoring at will like some of these other teams in the league. So this is something you have to do. And, Duchesne's description was interesting. I think effort is probably, like, again, it's sort of overstated, or it's used as a blanket statement on things. It's more than that. It's probably, like, the trust that he was talking about, chemistry that he was talking about. But that's kind of impressive, too, because they've had such lineup changes. So I think you have to give credit to the coaching, too, here for figuring some things out. And it's a big part of why they are where they are, is that they've been able to, you know, to keep pucks in and wear people out and be physical.
And then Elli Tolvanen on a 6-game point streak right now as well, going for a 7-game streak tonight, whether it's via assist or via goal tonight. Elli Tolvanen has been very good this year, specifically against the Dallas Stars. He's found a lot of success against them as of late, and obviously another chapter written in that book the other night. It's interesting. I really like, you know, I love that line of Forsberg, Johansson, and Tolvanen. Now, obviously, with Forsberg not being available, they've had to switch it up, and they've put Arvidsson up there moving Tolvanen over to the left side on the left wing there. I mean, it's interesting from this standpoint because you've got Johansson out there with two guys that are not really the biggest. I mean, Tolvanen's 5'10", Arvidsson's about 5'7", 5'8", so it's not like you've got the biggest lineup out there, but they've still been able to play with some speed. That jumped out to me the other night in the game. Johansson had a few shifts where he was flying out there, and you don't really think of Ryan Johansson as a speed demon out there, and I'm not saying that he's, you know, Victor Arvidsson or anything like that, but that line right now playing really fast, that's a good sign for the Predators. Tolvanen, he's got some wheels. He can move a little bit. We know about Arvidsson, but I thought the line playing really fast the other night against Dallas, especially in the third period, and that's how you got to play against this team. I mean, Dallas, if they have their druthers, they're not going to let your defenseman skate the puck up the ice at all. Like, that's, I think how in years past, that's how they've been really effective against the Predators, because they have really done a great job of kind of walling things off and making Roman Josi make a decision of where to go with the puck rather than just carrying it up through the ice. They did that about halfway through the game the other night, and the Predators found a way to break through it and move the puck a lot better. But I'm interested to see, like, if that's going to be the way Dallas plays and they try to wall your defensemen off from kind of joining the rush that way, can your forwards take advantage of that and play with some speed? They did that pretty well in the third period the other night.
And there's no reason to expect anything but Saros tonight.
Oh, right? No. Yeah, I would expect Saros to be in there. You got to. I mean, you've got to ride the hot hand at this moment. Now, maybe he comes back down the earth tonight and you reevaluate on Saturday against Chicago and put Pekka back in, but I wouldn't think there's any chance that we'll see anybody but Saros to start the game tonight for the Predators. So I think that's the way you've got to handle it if you're John Hines.
What's the longest – we talk about the longest winning streak. I'd like to know the longest streak of excellence that Saros has had in his career. He's had some.
Yes.
Sure. Last year he had a really good one before the pause.
Yep.
But he's on one right now.
He is on a heater right now. There's no question about that. Can he keep it up? And when it inevitably stops at some point, what does that look like? Is it a major falling off the cliff or is a minor regression back to the mean of numbers? That would be, I think, the interesting question to figure out. If it's the latter of those options, I still think you're probably in a pretty good spot if you're the Nashville Predators. But you brought up John Hines there and the decisions that he's made. I want to ask this question, and you can respond on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Has the last run the Predators have been on, has this winning streak that they've been on, changed your thought at all on John Hines and how you feel about him as the coach moving forward? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll discuss it next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you're tuning in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Pred's Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll have that exciting opportunity coming up for you at 8:45. The Predators taking on the Dallas Stars tonight at Bridgestone Arena. And Robbie Stanley going for two wins in a row in our competition here in Pred's Pick to Click. So you'll have that opportunity coming up at 8:45 this morning here on Robbie and Rex Row. Joe, let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, which you can send in your text as well, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Jim texts in and says, I don't know that Arvidsson has hardly played any games this season. Trade him already.
Dang, Arvy hater.
I mean,
he's played in every game
this season.
I don't know that he's not played in any games, Jim.
I think he's been there the whole time. Now, has he been as productive as you would like him to be? No. He's got 18 points in 37 games, 5 goals in 37 games. That is not what we are used to seeing from Victor Arvidsson. So, I hear you on the he's been disappointing part. But he's played every game, 37 games.
He's had some bad luck.
He has.
Set up Tolvanen to set you set Tolvanen and you up.
He should have had a goal the other night. And then Hudobin made a ridiculous save, diving across the crease.
The fact that wasn't ESPN top 10, and some of the ones we saw that were.
Yeah, just a travesty.
A joke.
Oversight.
I think that they just, like, do they just say, hey, let's take, like, two hockey highlights. Just pick or like one.
I think they've got like one guy doing it. He's just sitting there in a control room somewhere and be like, yeah, that looks good. Put it in top 10.
They've got teams of people on all the other sports, including like grainy. They got someone for like grainy
cell phone video,
like middle school soccer video person.
Yeah.
But yeah, one person on hockey.
That'll change. When ESPN gets the hockey rights,
you would think so, right? Once it's there, yeah. Once it's their inventory,
that's right.
Changes things a little bit.
Joe, what do you think of how to evaluate John Hines during the streak? Because it's interesting. You've been pretty consistent on this when we've talked about it all season long. There were a lot of fans that were frustrated with John Hines. A lot of fans that weren't impressed with John Hines to begin with when David Poile made the hire, and I think part of the credit that you've got to give for this turnaround has been the job that he's done, kind of managing things through this, developing players and making sure younger players are ready to come in and contribute. And also, you know, just kind of his voice in the locker room. I mean, Roman Josi was on with Jared yesterday and just talked about their belief in John Hines as well. I think the players really like John Hines, and that message has resonated with them up until this point. How would you evaluate John Hines this season, and how much credit do you think he deserves for the turnaround that we've seen?
Yeah, with hockey, I kind of look at it like hockey and honestly anything but football. I look at kind of the same in that I think the schematic part of it is overrated, right? I mean, you have to be able to, like, most people couldn't even do what a hockey coach does in terms of, like, calling out line shift,
no.
Right, and stuff like that. But once you everyone's has the basics, then you can do it.
Sure.
Or how much variance is there really in these systems? I know there is.
There's some, and
you're finding matchups and all that stuff. But, like, I just we're hearing a lot of people and people who know more than I do about hockey talking about, look at these players and their production under Hines. How is it not on him? When Peter Laviolette was here, there's people putting out these. Look at the blobs. Look at the blobs on this map. This proves that Peter Laviolette knows nothing about hockey.
Yeah,
like yeah, I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people wear on people. I mean, but hockey coaches are the most fired, right?
Oh yeah,
they are the most fired. So why is that? I think because you can't fire the players. I just think it's something that people go to way too quickly, and sometimes changing the voice is worthwhile. But how many like in the NFL? Sometimes it's like, okay, this guy's offense is terrible, or defense, or like there's a schematic reason to switch coaches. How often in hockey is that? Why? It's like, oh, this system just does – it's archaic system. I mean, it's the same game.
It's rare. I mean, I think what you see a lot of times in hockey is there are coaches who are more offensively minded and coaches that are more defensively minded. Like,
sure.
Ken Hitchcock, you're going to be playing a lot of defense.
Well,
you're going to clock things up.
You go from Trotz to Laviolette.
Exactly.
You go from a defensive coach to an offensive coach.
You see
coach.
Teams do that a lot, where if whatever happened, and that's not just a hockey thing. I think they do
that's
that in football, too.
Yeah.
I mean, if the defensive guy didn't work, bring in the offensive guy and see if that works. I think you see that as much or more in hockey than you do any other sport.
So that's it. It's basically the philosophical stance.
Yeah.
But – look, I mean, so you asked the question, do I think he deserves credit? Yeah. And I've heard people also say maybe this is it's the way things have worked out have helped him because he's always most of his career he's been a developmental hockey guy working with young players, and now he's got all these young guys, so maybe he reaches them better. I get, you know, I mean, that's possible, I guess. But to me, he's pretty even keel, and he's kind of been preaching a lot of the same things. And when you see a team start to do the things that were talked about for a long time, I don't see how you don't credit the coach.
Yeah.
It's up to him to get them to do the stuff. They're doing the stuff.
They are doing the stuff, that is for sure. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Rob from Franklin, who wants to weigh in. Rob, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's interesting you talk about the dynamics of a coach. And if you look at different sports, that the dynamics of a coach define the team. Take Vrabel. And I'll bring it back to the present in a sec. But take Vrabel. I'm good friends with a person that played with him for years. And in the Patriots locker room, he described him as an absolute piece of work because he was the biggest, the strongest, and he could wield whatever sword he wanted in that locker room. He wasn't a kind, gentle dude, if you know what I mean. He was a complete turd. So, and he's brought a lot of that attitude into the Titans, and I think has defined, at least a little bit, defined how they, you know, they do have an identity. So the Predators, the beginning of this season, John Hines, who has the personality of a banana, you know, brings in what? Not a lot of identity and not a lot of passion. And it's just even keel, great. One of the reasons why Laviolette got fired was because he brought in a lot of passion, demanded a lot of attention and to detail on different elements. And the bottom line is that team had a lot of identity. The problem with that is that wears out after about three and a half years. And you'll see that he'll get fired in about 2.5 years because it'll wear out. What I think the difference is, however, is, and to think on Crispy and why they've had some success over the last 5-6 games is they have had a pep in their step. The forecheck has been very, very good. And the one point that Crispy brought up that I 100% agree with is that their puck management and their puck, call it control, has been so much better in the last 5-6 games. And you can see that, and if you take into account the fact that if you have the puck and they're chasing you, it's a big deal. And just one other point, and not to be that disagreeing guy, but you, in hockey, you have 6 people on the ice, one of them goalie. You know, your goalie, you have a goalie coach, but the difference is in play and in structure, coach to coach, is massive. Take for instance, Laviolette's play in the defensive zone, where literally it's almost man-to-man. You've got the coverage, which you call the hot zone in front of the net that somebody sticks to, but then you follow people almost man-to-man. This is a zone coverage where people bunch down and try to block shots. This team blocks a lot more shots. The problem is I think the structure on the offensive side hasn't blended in the beginning of the season, but it's starting to now, and you can tell by the way that they cycle the puck, as a for instance. Watch them cycling the puck, even though they're going to get drilled, you know, almost on a 2-to-1 ratio. Watch tonight the way they cycle the puck, and that's where you can see that John's scheme is coming together a little bit.
Hey, thanks for the call, Rob. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, and I agree with a lot of what he said there, but...
Yeah, there's variance for sure.
I'm not saying there's no variance, but... I think some people act like there's just this massive difference. There's not.
Well, and I guess my point is, like, is there a coach in this league who has a system that other coaches would be like, oh, what are you doing?
Right.
Get this out of here. This doesn't work in hockey.
Right.
I mean, now you do have to tailor. I think the best coaches tailor what they do to their personnel. I think that's a big thing. Any coach who is in any sport married to system, I think that's a mistake, and the best coaches say, this player needs to be doing this, so I'm going to adjust it, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I thought some good points, and the two words that really stick out to me from that whole call are turd and banana.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
But it was a good call.
There we go. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on the Nashville Predators. Preds assistant coach Dan Hynote will join us. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. The Predators taking on the Dallas Stars tonight at Bridgestone Arena, going for 7 wins in a row. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote. Dan, what's going on, man? How we doing?
Oh, doing great, man. Just ready to get back at it.
I bet you are. And obviously, we talked a lot about your team this week, going for 7 wins in a row tonight. Dan, from your vantage point, watching this group battle through everything they've had to battle through from an injury standpoint and really turning this season around, how have you guys, from your vantage point, been able to do this? What stood out to you about this winning streak?
Well, I think... You know, the team game has really come a long way, you know, from the beginning of the season. I think, you know, our physical play, like, for instance, we keep stats on, you know, on kind of the takes no talent type stuff that the players are, that any player can do. And against Dallas, we had 66 hits, and that's a crazy number. And the number that we keep track of, it's not necessarily something that, you know, the NHL is going to break down. But my point is, when you have 66 hits and these are coming from every single player on the team, it's an investment. Then by the, you know, by the third period, we're wearing, you know, we wear teams down that way. It's an investment that we make, and why we've been such a good third period team. But anyway, and to make it the long story even longer, our team game has really come together with all the guys pulling on the rope the same way. And it's been fun, so much fun to be a part of.
So, Dan, what else in that? Do you have other stats in there that would not be found on a box score, effort-related stats that you can share with us?
Well, I mean, we had 16 blocks, you know, 24 takeaways. You know, our 50-50, we were 65% in our 50-50 battles, which is a large number as well. And basically, it's you know, at the end of the day, it's just telltale of what kind of effort you're getting on a night-to-night basis. And that sheet has been great for us during this stretch, you know. And so it's getting the guys to understand that these things are an investment in our success. And in the beginning of the season, we weren't getting wins, and we were getting the effort. And so it was kind of a harder sell, you know. And now this hard work is paying off in wins and pucks in the net and, you know, and good things. So it's a lot easier to sell. But they've seen the success, so they're fully bought in now. And it's, like I said, it's just a fun game to watch.
Yeah, because that was going to be my next question. It was, were these, you know, these numbers way down earlier, but apparently not. So it's been pretty consistent in that way, in the effort-related things?
Yeah, it has been. You know, it hasn't been across the board like it is now. You know, you'd get three-quarters of the team playing, and then, you know, some nights you get a full effort, but it just wouldn't, you know, go our way or whatever. But you know, over the last probably 15, 20 games, it's been really good effort across the board. You know, you don't always get the wins and you don't always get the bounces, but when you're keeping track of these types of things and the numbers are good, then you know that at least you're getting the type of effort you need to win in this league.
Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And then we've talked the last couple of days about the forecheck and how relentless it's been with your group. And Matt Duchene kind of broke that down a little bit for us yesterday here on the show. You don't have to get into, you know, the specific X's and O's of exactly what you guys are doing out there. But from your vantage point, when the forecheck is at its best, what's working really well with this forward group from your standpoint there?
Well, we're surprisingly physical. Yeah, and I don't mean surprisingly that these players, but we're not a big unit up front, you know, compared to some of the teams in our division. But we're tenacious and we're mean and we're physical. And you know, that what happens, like I said, you know, you get 20 hits in the first, 20 hits in the second, by the third, you know, D don't want to go back for that puck anymore. They just want, they'll either say, hey, go ahead, you can have it first touch, or they're just getting rid of it a little bit quicker. And maybe they're not making the clean play anymore. And now we're able to establish an offensive zone attack because things just didn't connect for them. And usually they don't connect for them because of the commitment that we made in the first and the second, to play that style, you know, and our guys are heavy over pucks. You know, you watch our fourth line, whenever they get control of the puck, it's at some point it's going to find its way to the net, you know, and the same, you could say that with every line lately. So, you know, it kind of builds on that. You know, Cunning coming back in the lineup, I think he had like 8 or 9 hits last game, you know, and he's a physical force, which makes room for Granlund and makes room for Yarncroc, and, you know, and there's kind of a cumulative effect of the more physical and the harder you play and the harder you are to play against, you know, the better the team will do as the game wears on.
So, Dan, with some of these young guys, a part of what you're talking about there, but a lot of them really coming on beyond Tolvanen, do you think that has had a positive effect on some of the veterans too? A little bit of, you know, follow the lead of the kids, or even a little bit of like, hey, if I want to be in this lineup, I need to lay some more hits on people and things like that.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, they've got a ton of energy. You can feel it in the locker room. You can feel it on the bench. Obviously, you can see it on the ice. The young guys have done a great job stepping in, you know, when asked. This is the type of season where if you weren't deep, if you didn't have good young prospects coming into your lineup, courtesy of injury, you would fall by the wayside. And, you know, so we've been very fortunate to have a deep stable of good hockey players because they've all played. I mean, I don't think there's anyone that's ever come up in the taxi squad that hasn't played. So, that hasn't done well when they've played. So, you know, that's been a huge boost for us because you get new energy, you get new life. I mean, this season with playing basically every other day, it could get really stagnant if you didn't have a team that really liked each other and didn't have good energy, but we have that here. So we've been really fortunate, and the young guys have been a huge part of that.
Dan, obviously a young guy that has been a huge part of that on the score sheet has been Elli Tolvanen on a 6-game point streak right now, had the game winner the other night in overtime. I think just watching him for the last few years, we've always known about the offensive ability and the shot that he has, and that continues to shine through here. But I've been pretty blown away about his play away from the puck, how physical he's been, his play in the defensive zone. When you look at Tolvanen and his all-around game, are we witnessing potentially the start of something very special here in Nashville with his game overall?
Yeah, depending on your definition of special, he's been a huge surprise for me in the style of play. You know, I always knew he was skilled and I knew he had a great shot, but I had no idea he was so physical. I had no idea he was so responsible. And, you know, he's kind of one of those players where you're like, how does the puck always end up bouncing to this guy? And how does this puck follow this kid around the ice? But it's because he thinks the game at a really good level. So he's predicting. And so what seems like luck is usually just him being really smart and kind of understanding where the puck is probably going to go, and then half the time it does. And so I've been really surprised, I guess you'd say, with how well-rounded of a player he is and has become. Like, I mean, I'm just looking at the sheet, he had 9 hits, you know, against Dallas. And, yeah, he scores the game winner, you know, and he makes the play on the power play, and he has some, you know, some other good plays throughout the game, but he wears you, he gets you on a bunch of different ways. He had a hip check the other day in the middle of the ice, which was awesome. And, you know, but no one expects that from a guy like him. And then all of a sudden he's a heavy hitter. So it's been great, you know, but just kind of watching his evolution this year.
Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexor. Dan, appreciate you taking time to join us this morning, and good luck tonight against the Dallas Stars.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Dan Hynote, our guest here on Robbie and Rexor. The Predators going for 7 wins in a row tonight against the Dallas Stars. And it is interesting to think about, you know, the different stats that they keep up with that don't find their way into your average box score, and kind of highlighting there, I mean, 66 hits, how they tracked it the other night, how physical the Predators have been. And you don't think of Elli Tolvanen as a guy that's all that physical, but he's been throwing his weight around a little bit as of late. Good all-around game from Elli Tolvanen. The offense getting the attention right now, deservedly so. But like I told Dan, I've been blown away with how good he's been in other aspects of the game as well.
Yeah, and when you have the skilled guy who makes plays like that, kind of like young guys, can like we talked about with them, I think young guys can sometimes get that energy going and also maybe give a little kick to the veterans in the butt, like, hey,
yeah,
young guys coming for your job. But also when the skilled guys lay hits on people, that's infectious too.
When we come back, we will switch gears and look ahead at the Final Four coming up this weekend in the world of college basketball. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's time to save cash fast with Nashville's Best Deals. Go to thegamenashville.com and click on the Nashville's Best Deals banner to get half off a $20 gift card from Grain & Berry in Hillsborough Village. Grain & Berry is Nashville's superfood cafe where healthy meets delicious. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on YouTube, on Twitch, and on Periscope as well, taking you through this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote for joining us in the last segment, and we'll have Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic joining us to begin the 8 o'clock hour. Some interesting news yesterday regarding the NCAA and the Supreme Court. So we'll get to some of that with her coming up to begin the 8 o'clock hour. Right now, looking ahead to the Final Four, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Now, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, and we do have resident basketball expert Elijah Campbell with us today on the program as well. So, Elijah, I'll start with you. As you look ahead at this Final Four with Gonzaga taking on UCLA, you've got Houston and Baylor in the battle of the state of Texas. Obviously, I think everybody would say that Houston's got a better chance to take down Baylor than UCLA would have to take down Gonzaga. But what's it going to take from UCLA, in your opinion, to hang in there with Gonzaga and make this a game? Because that's been quite a challenge for teams as of late to even make it a game with Gonzaga.
Outside of divine intervention, I think the first thing that UCLA needs is going to be able to keep
is to keep
Gonzaga just from making layups on them. I mean, like, in the half court, Gonzaga against USC was still being able to scheme up layups. You got to make them at least force make them shoot tough jump shots. Gonzaga's still a great jump shot shooting team. I mean, Corey Kispert's the best shooter in the country. The guy's making like 45% of his threes on 6 or 7 attempts per game, which is just astronomical.
Even though his shot's a line drive.
It is a line drive.
Maybe they'll give him more looks from three.
I mean, he, like, I don't know, so, but his feet are always set. That's one thing I like about Corey Kispert's shot. His feet are always set, and it's a good, very fundamentally sound shot until you look at see how it's like shot, but it goes in. I mean, it is a little bit of a line drive. But if you can just make them shoot jumpers and not let them just get layups, I mean, that's much easier said than done, obviously. But that's what that's one thing they did against Michigan really well. I mean, all of Hunter Dickinson's post-ups, he ended up shooting 7-8 feet away from the basket instead of putting his armpits in the rim. I mean, you got to be able to at least play some interior defense against Gonzaga to at least make those looks hard. I mean, Gonzaga is going to hit shots. I mean, this is one of the best offensive teams we've ever seen in college basketball, the way they pass, the way they cut. They're going to generate good looks, and they're going to be able to get open jumpers. You just got to hope they miss them and don't let them get second or third chance opportunities. That's the biggest thing, at least, to keep them in check offensively.
The difference between Dickinson and Timmy is that Dickinson can go one way, and mm-hmm. UCLA had the scouting report.
Yep.
Yeah, there were a couple times where you just go over your other shoulder and you dunk on him, and instead he's throwing like – I mean, he actually made like two or three like ridiculously hard shots.
He already looked uncomfortable.
The Timmy will go either way on you and
he's ambidextrous.
Carve you up. Yeah, mm-hmm. They're gonna have to shoot crazy well too. Juzang. I mean, Jaquez was not good against mm-hmm. Michigan. They still won that game. He was bad
offensively. Really, there wasn't anyone that was good other than Juzang. I mean, Tiger Campbell played all right. He didn't shoot particularly well, but he was at least able to generate some offense when they needed it, and at least be able to generate some open looks. I mean, in UCLA, I mean, you're not going to beat Gonzaga by scoring 51 points. I'll go ahead and say that right now. You can't have an effective field goal shooting percentage of 41% and expect to win that game. I mean, Franz Wagner might have gone 1-for-10 against him, but I don't expect Corey Kispert to. Or even if he does, you still have to deal with Suggs and Drew Timmy and Andrew Nembhard and Joel Ayayi. I mean, it's number one, I would say, is still divine intervention if UCLA wants to beat Gonzaga. That's their best shot, realistically.
Well, I mean, at this point, they may have had a little already.
They might have used
some of those Alabama free throws. You know, somebody was pulling the string on
Alabama
those.
Free throws, Franz Wagner shooting that game-winning three about a foot short, Eli Brooks airballing the putback layup from underneath the basket. I mean, there's already been a lot of divine intervention, and this run is getting, I mean, damn near biblical at this point because of some of the help that's gone along the way, getting to play Abilene Christian in the second round. Like
John Wooden.
Yeah.
Yes. John Wooden from beyond.
Pulling the strings. That's
John
right.
Wooden and the endless enthusiasm of Bill Walton working
yes,
from afar.
That's right. Absolutely. And then you look at the other matchup. I am fascinated between Baylor and Houston. I mean, obviously it's a 1-2. So it's a much different scenario than we're talking about in the first game, in the Final Four with Gonzaga and UCLA. But this Baylor-Houston game to me is interesting. Like Houston,
I've watched a little bit of them in the tournament so far. I'm not really excited to watch them play again because of their style of play, but I do think they've got a chance. If Baylor has an off shooting night, you've got a chance if you're Houston to win this game. Obviously, a much better chance than I would give UCLA, but really pulling for Baylor and Gonzaga from an entertainment value. That's for sure.
Might be a rock fight in that one for sure. But, yeah, Baylor-Gonzaga, we've been waiting on it. I think most people would want to see that. Although maybe some people are rooting against Gonzaga just to see them get upset. I mean, Indiana fans. The Indiana angle on this whole Final Four is interesting. It's in Indiana. Indiana fans are clutching to, you know, 1976. And because, I mean, really, Indiana is very much to me Tennessee football, except a much longer stretch of being okay. I mean, their last they got to the final game the 1 year with Mike Davis right after Bobby Knight, so in 2002. But really, they haven't been a consistent contender for stuff like that since the early 90s under Bobby Knight. You know, but they have the fan base, they have the facilities, the resources, all this stuff. So they're clutching to that. And then the Kelvin Sampson, he was part of the Indiana history of burying that program. I mean, Kelvin Sampson it's a very interesting thing now versus then. And some people have been retweeting or bringing back up the old articles from Kelvin Sampson's time, because if anybody remembers, it was all the phone calls. Now, it wasn't just that. And I know because Tom Crean followed him up, and it was bad. Like, there was, like, no one going to class. Like, it was a bad program under Kelvin. He drove the program into the ground. But he was kind of treated like a villain of all that's good in the world for just basically saying, screw you, I'm going to make all these calls that are impermissible.
Yeah.
And now it does kind of sound funny, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
That, you know, the phone calls. I mean, some of the rules he broke are not rules anymore, too, by the way. So
did the FBI wiretap his phone, too?
No, and that's the thing. I mean,
dang.
So you got Kelvin Sampson, who is vilified, get out. I mean, again, there was a Pat Forty piece that someone shared, and it was like, he'll never work again in college athletics, right, and stuff like that. Here he is, and we have Will Wade, who's just always going to be the example of like, oh, yeah, the NCAA does a great job of enforcing rules.
Still under investigation, by the way.
Yeah. Well,
still going.
The FBI's still
taking a long, hard look at Will Wade.
Yeah, we got the Supreme Court talking college sports this week. We got the FBI just keeps using resources.
A lot of government resources involved in college sports at the moment.
To investigate a college basketball coach.
Yeah. Thank God. Yeah, now I can sleep at night knowing that we're listening to Will Wade's phone calls and what he's doing to get Javonte Smart.
Yeah.
I can sleep a lot better at night.
But it's interesting with Kelvin Sampson now. Sort of, it's like a redemption story, you know, and obviously he's done really good work at Houston. But the way he was vilified back then and now, it's just changed a lot. It's interesting.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Brian in Portland texts in and says, Kispert's shot reminds me a lot of Ray Allen's, the way that he always has got his feet set and the line drive that goes in. Between him and Timmy, there's no way that UCLA has a chance.
You agree with that? I think Ray Allen had a little more lift on his shot than
Allen had more lift, but yeah. He's correct
but
about the footwork.
That's a good point. Yeah,
and that's what makes Kispert's shot
release.
So great. Yeah, the quick release and that, like, just watch this weekend. Anytime Corey Kispert has that ball, even before the ball's in his hands, his feet are going to get set. And he's a threat to shoot it the millisecond it touches his hands. And that's what makes it so good. That's how he's able to get off like 6.5, 7 shots a game from beyond the arc, even though every scouting report in the country says, don't let this guy shoot the three, run him off the three-point line. He's still able to shoot that many in a game because his shot is so quick and his feet are always going to get set.
Ray Allen, responsible for the greatest moment in the history of my sporting life.
Yeah. I was hoping that you would bring that up.
Yeah. Greatest shot in NBA history. Game 6, 2013.
I was not a big fan of that moment, but it was pretty incredible. I must say, it was pretty incredible.
Slid across the floor, got some carpet burn. It was great.
Loved it. Speechless.
That's right. When we come back, we will get into a little bit more of the college sports world with Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic. Some interesting developments yesterday between the NCAA and the Supreme Court. We'll talk to Nicole about that coming up here in just a few minutes. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.